You're listening to Hooked on Harness.
Esto va a llegar. Rian Wesley, Whiteside, residential ball. Whiteside's coming on. Rian, Whiteside, the outside. Whiteside, with the little brown shirt.
Hello, good listener, and welcome to episode number 23 of the Hooked on Harness podcast. We are very excited to be back. It's been a while since we last recorded. Our last episode was just over a month ago. And since then, there have been a number of updates. First, Bern Tobin joining me as always. How are you, Bern?
I'm doing good, Adam. Great to be back on Hooked on Harness. I guess we're missing our wingman today. Adam Keene is on assignment at the cottage, right?
Yeah, Adam Keene is on vacation this week, but you and I, a few days ago, were looking at our schedules and realizing that if we didn't put something out soon, it was going to be verging on 2 months without any kind of a recording. So felt like it was time to just put something out there, given everything that's gone on since we last recorded on May the 29th. So very grateful that in Ontario, racing, harness racing has been back up and running for the better part of a month and a half. Bern, and that means that we actually have real, actual horse updates based on about 6 weeks of racing.
And good horses, too.
And good horses. What a surprise. which is great, at least in my case. We're going to talk a little bit around wagering and really, I guess, state of the sport in terms of wagering, given all the professional sports that have been shut down due to the pandemic. We're seeing some very interesting things from the perspective of harness racing and wagering, which I think is great news for the sport. We'll talk about the whole media piece around that with TSN picking up some of the broadcasting. And then we're going to try a slightly different segment. Bern, you gave me a rather odd assignment and told me to watch a horse racing movie from the early 1970s. So this will be the first ever Hooked on Harness movie review.
You said it.
And hopefully the first of many. So lots to talk about.
We are going to talk about the movie that got me into horse racing, that made me a fan.
So, Bern, I don't know how to start this segment on horses, but I think we have to start with Walk on the Moon. So as I'm sitting here, we're recording this on a Sunday evening. I'm looking at my wall here in my office, my home office, and I've got a couple of winning photos of Promise Blue Chip and Art Seeker. And each of those winning photos was for a total purse, in both cases, of $6,500. About a week ago, we had a horse place second, racing for a whole lot more than that against competition that was a whole lot tougher in the Gold Series. So this is my first experience with a Gold Circuit horse, like a legit Gold Circuit horse. And if not for the freak of nature that kind of edged him out at the end of the first Gold race, we'll get to that in a minute. Very exciting with Walk on the Moon in both of his starts. He's got a third place and a second place finish, but just by virtue of the competition that he's racing against and the level that he's racing at, I mean, this horse is already probably the most successful horse I've ever been a part of.
Oh, for sure.
Now, I know you and Adam Keene have had a lot more success than that, and we were talking just before we started recording about the fact that the reason why the horse is doing so well is because I've been banned from going to the racetrack because of the pandemic. Nobody's allowed there. So I think that's a pretty good sign that this horse is going to continue to do really well. But
a couple of thoughts on that. I mean, first of all, you know, Walk on the Moon is the two-year-old Archangel Trotter that you, myself, and Adam Keene all invested in back, I'm going to say it was November, it was December, I guess, the open house at the stable. And we all got our little piece from a share perspective. And you brought your friend Anthony in, for who's a first time owner, right?
Yeah, he's a first time owner, a friend who I've known for many, many years since we were kids. We grew up together, and I got to keep impressing on him the fact that this is not normal. You don't typically buy a share in your first horse and already have it doing the types of things that we're seeing. But it's great to see. I mean, everything certainly looked like that's where this horse should end up based on what we were seeing through kind of January through April. Certainly the horse trained well, but you never really know until you see it on a track. And we even have an arch nemesis at this point in Macho Martini, who won the first gold race running some. Can you remember? I should have looked this up before. What was Macho Martini's final quarter first gold race? Because it was insane.
Well, I think Walk on the Moon was
27-1.
Walk on the Moon was on the front end and came home in 27-4, and he got ran down by Macho Martini in 27-1. So that's awesome. I mean, our horse raced awesome, and a couple of things there. I mean, like you've had a few horses now with the stable, and you know, the bottom line was neither of them are really competitive at a grassroots level, shall we say, the B circuit. This guy looks like the top competitor in the A circuit, and that is the goal level. And it's so much fun to be involved at this level because, as you're finding out already, you've got an arch nemesis. He's going to end up basically racing against the same horses. You mentioned Macho Martini, who looks like the creme de la creme here. There's another horse called Tokyo Sealster. So those guys are going to butt heads probably for $100,000 a pop. For the rest of the summer, potentially with the final being for $250,000. So, again, it's a lot of fun when you know who the horses you have to beat, and we're sitting here at home trying to find ways to beat them.
Yeah, and I mean, hats off to everybody who was involved at the stable in bringing this horse to the level that he's at right now. Too many names to mention, but certainly Mario, the trainer and driver, has done an outstanding job. Really played it nice and conservative in the first race, and I think really hung him back and started him towards the back. In that gold race, did everything right. I mean, had him on the front, and anything other than a freak of nature isn't going to catch him. I mean, those two horses were several lengths ahead of anybody else in that first gold race, which was nice to see. I mean, I've never been a part of a horse that leading off the front like that for the majority of, you know, the second and third quarter of the race. I've never been involved in any horse that does anything other than completely fade into oblivion as they come down the stretch. So it was nice to see Walk on the Moon hang around and pick up a second place finish in that race, because there were a few spots where I'm like, this is where every other horse, like watching the replay, this is where every other horse that I've been involved in would disappear and be right at the back of the bus by the time he crossed the finish line. So
yeah, but every other horse you've been involved in wouldn't have been in that race.
There have been some other, let's say, highs and lows in the horses that we've been involved in. Bern, why don't you talk for a couple of minutes about White Tiger? I think you mentioned him briefly on the last episode, if I'm not mistaken, but White Tiger, slightly older horse. But what's your strategy there, and what have you seen in the last couple of months?
Yeah, White Tiger. I bought a Sheeran White Tiger at thestable.ca a couple of months back during the pandemic, I suppose, when all the race horses were off. And he was a real good 2-year-old, struggled as a 3-year-old, but I thought he'd make a real good 4-year-old. And he raced his first race last week, trod it in 153-2, I think, the fastest mile of his life. And he did that off the shelf, as we like to say, and looked really, really good doing it. So I think he's going to be a real good older trotter. So I'm pretty excited about that. And he looks to be staying put here at Mohawk. So that's going to be, it's going to be fun to watch him, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And certainly I remember watching him as a 2-year-old, and he did look outstanding. And then, to be honest, as a 3-year-old, I sort of forgot about him, but I don't know how much he races as a 3-year-old. So this is kind of nice to see him coming back now.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And, you talk about highs and lows. I mean, like, a horse we've talked a lot about this winter is Beef and Cheddar. The Better Than Cheddar colt that I have a share in, bred by our friend of the HOH podcast, Matt Chappell. And we went out and we raced in our first OSS Grassroots. Oh, I don't know. I think that was 10 days ago or so, or maybe 2 weeks ago.
I think,
yeah. And, he looked great, except for in the first turn, he drove over. James McDonald was behind in the bike with the lines in his hand, and he drove over three pylons and ended up finishing, you know, a real good third in a photo for second, came home with 27 seconds, but was disqualified for running over the pylons. So
on account of the three pylons. Yeah.
So
let's stick with the lows there, because I think that's the start of a couple of other ones. I mean, Spare Seed is probably the easier one to talk about, and then we'll get to Need Your Opinion. But what's happening with Khan, as we like
yes,
to call
Khan,
him?
My old trotter. You know, he's one of those horses just knows how to lose, finds ways to lose. And, you know, the good horses that we'll all own will find ways to take advantage of opportunities. You know, you get a good pocket trip, you finish the race, and, you take the big chunk of money. But Spare Seed, God bless him, finds ways to lose, sitting in the pocket and decides to make a break at the top of the stretch on a perfect trip. And just bad behavior here and there. But, he is what he is, and we have him, and we're hopeful for him. He's one of those horses who just knows how to, throw money.
He knows how to
throw money in a hole. How about that?
Yeah.
And then there's Need Your Opinion, that nice little filly we've had now for 2 years, and she is tough as nails and just had no luck since returning from the pandemic. A bad post, and last week in the OSS Grassroots, we drew the 9 hole, and we got run into by the 8 horse at the starting gate and knocked almost off stride, and the 8 horse got disqualified. And then we were coming around the turn, we got back into it, trying to get a check from all the way back there, and another horse breaks and runs into us and gives us another body check. So it's funny, you look at the line on Standardbred Canada, and there's 2 eyes. That's double interference, and you don't see that too often. So, but the little horse, she did not break stride. She kept pacing, and boy, tough as nails. And hopefully, as I said to Matt Chappell last week, things will iron out. She's had no luck. She's due for a good trip and a little bit of luck. So hopefully it comes our way.
So I did watch the double interference. It was painful to watch, because I feel like of all the horses that right now, Bern, are maybe in the not performing up to expectations, Need Your Opinion is certainly the one where you think with a little bit of luck, she should be able to turn that around, because to your point, interfered with, doesn't break stride, and does seem pretty solid. So hopefully that can turn around shortly. Bern, the last time you and Adam and I got together to record a Hooked on Harness episode was way back on May the 29th, which really seems like a long time ago. We knew then that on June the 6th, racing was going to resume in Ontario. We also knew that for at least a few weeks, probably a couple of months, harness racing was going to be really the only sport in town from a it actually happening perspective, at least in terms of North America, and also from a wagering perspective, that it was really going to be getting a bit of a unique opportunity. We were talking about it broadcasting on TSN and how that was going to get going. So since then, we've had about 6 weeks of live racing. There's been a TSN broadcast. Now, I'm going to admit something to all of our listeners, which, Bern, you've known for many years. I haven't had cable probably in 20 years, so I haven't been able to catch the TSN broadcast. So maybe just from out of a place of complete ignorance, I'm going to ask you, just give our listeners a synopsis of what you're seeing on the TSN broadcast, what you like, what you maybe don't like, or what your general impressions are.
Well, overall, I mean, it's just great to see horse racing back on a major network on national television. So we haven't seen it
for sure.
I haven't seen it for many years. Back in most people who follow this industry and racing would remember the old Score broadcasts on the Score, which was an old all sports network back 10 years ago, I guess 15 years ago now, 10 years ago, and we had Monday nights. But to see the racing back. 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock Thursday nights, prime time. A really nice effort, I think, on behalf of Wagon TSN. Combination, right? Thoroughbred and standardbred racing. So you've got 3 standardbred races, 3 thoroughbred races, starting with the thoroughbreds at 6 o'clock, and then mixing in the standardbreds as the program comes on at line at 7. You got 6 races. You know, there's enough content there. Great camera angles and great great high def work from the Woodbine folks. Nice work at the desk, Laura Dykin and Jason Portwando, and back and forth with Chad Rosema at Mohawk. So really, really, really nice work, and great to see it back on the network. Great exposure. They introduced the Dark Horse app. We talked about that, where, you know, you can download your app and actually, you know, people who are not familiar with the game can take a simple approach to betting through the app. They promote
that.
Yeah,
we'll get to betting in a minute. Sorry to interrupt you, Vern, but we'll get to betting in a minute because I'm very interested. We had hypothesized on the last episode that they were probably going to do pretty well from a wagering perspective, but finish that thought.
Yeah, no, and, you know, exactly. That was part of the opportunity, right, was to, you know, to showcase the sport and obviously, you know, the betting opportunity that it is. So that's been pretty good. It's been a great broadcast, and I think everybody's proud of it and pretty happy to have it. And you know, and that has translated, as I say, into that betting conversation. And we have seen a pretty significant uptick in the bet at Mohawk. Most recently in the last, I'd say, 2-3 weeks, when we came out of the pandemic, the betting was quite flat for the first couple of weeks, interestingly, because I think a lot of the gamblers didn't want to put the big money down because they didn't know about the horses. They've been off 3 months, and Woodbine did decide not to have qualifiers. Other tracks across North America had qualifiers, so the bettors basically knew, had a sense of how the horses, you know, were coming off the layoff. But Woodbine decided, hey, let's drive on. We haven't got time for that. And that was fine. But it took the bettors a couple of weeks to warm up. And we've seen some significant numbers in the last, I'd say, in the last 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, you were running some numbers just before we started recording. And it was really great to see that certainly over the last 10 days, almost a 30% increase over historical as a kind of average per race wagering, it's up markedly. So I guess part of the question is, what do you see happening? I know there's no talk of how long TSN will continue with the broadcast. Any rumblings that you've heard, Bern? Like, is this going to continue in the long term? Like, what happens when all the standard sports come back?
It's hard to know. They haven't really made much of an announcement.
Yeah.
They are scheduled through the end of the month, and we're hoping that we're going to see it on through the summer. So, you know, but, you know, everybody knows baseball's coming, you know, hockey's coming, basketball's coming, and the NFL's coming. So they're all coming at some point, but whether they'll get there is another question as well. So, but the standardbred guys and the horse racing people, thoroughbreds, have managed to, you know, stay safe and keep the product going. And hey, just to follow up on those numbers, just to give you some numbers,
sure.
I did some spitballing on my numbers, and I got out my handy-dandy calculator. So to make a long story short, in 2019, Mohawk ran 216 dates. And what I always like to look at is the average bet per race, so because that's the thing that's most comparable from year to year. So for an average race, obviously we have 10 on a card a night, and it all adds up to a full card. But per each race in 2019, the betting public bet $161,000 per race. Now, I mentioned it was a little flat getting out of the gate, but over the last 10 racing nights at Mohawk, they have averaged $215,000 a race. So, Marcella, your math is better than mine. What's that? 30%?
Yeah, that's just over 30%. So that's a real nice bump up in terms of the viability of harness racing, and I think it's just good for the sport overall.
I want to do a shout out as well for some of the smaller racetracks, Adam. I mean, during the pandemic, you know, we have no racing fans at the tracks, and for small tracks like Clinton and Hanover, you know, the money is usually bet at the track, not through the HBI accounts or whatever, such as we do at Woodbine and Mohawk. And these guys have been working real hard. You know, their handle has been up on their racing cards as well. So they've had to work hard, get the word out, get the signal out, get involved at HBI, get their, you know, really market themselves. And they've done a real nice job.
And you're talking about one of Adam Keene's favorite tracks, the Hanover track and the Clinton track specifically.
Yeah, you know, small B tracks that, you know, don't have the resources typically aren't tied into the online virtual betting network. One more country fair, small town tracks, but then they've had to reinvent themselves somewhat to survive, and doggone it, they're doing a good job. Okay, well, I'm going to host the final segment of the show today. We are going to talk about horse racing movies, and I'm going to with a big focus on harness racing movies. But I want to kick this off with a little discussion on Justin Morgan Had a Horse, an old movie from, the, I guess, the early 70s, a Disney film that many of you might have seen if you're old as I am. And it really is the film that turned me into a horse racing fan. The story of Justin Morgan and this little Morgan horse that he raises out in the country. And, you know, it culminates with the big Blue Bloods, the New Yorkers coming through through the countryside with their big horses in a trailer, and the little Morgan has to take on Sweepstakes, the national champion, and manages to beat him on a country fair track, and all things end well in the Disney movie, and Bernard becomes a horse racing fan. We've seen a lot of movies since then. But Adam, your homework was to go home on the weekend and watch Justin Morgan Had a Horse. I know it's a little bit of Disney, but what'd you think?
Yeah, and you know, Bern, I had no recollection or knowledge of this movie. So I watched it with my six-year-old daughter a couple nights ago. And it definitely has that kind of Disney Sunday night movie kind of feel to it, which is something that I think many of us grew up watching. This is something that I can certainly remember, and it would be split over 2 or 3 weeks and a few commercial breaks kind of placed in there. But I think, you know, an amazing, like, the last sequence of that movie. I mean, it's a Disney movie from the 70s.
It's David and Goliath, my friend. It's every horse racing.
David and Goliath, the two entirely unlikable New York horse owners who come into town with their couple of well-bred thoroughbreds and just taking on all these country horses. And, you know, one of them has probably the most unlikable costume. They've literally dressed him like a leprechaun. He has a leprechaun outfit on. But the end of that movie, I mean, I couldn't help but think about something that a book that you and I read a couple years ago, which was Dan Patch, Crazy Good, and talking about the great horse Dan Patch. And you kind of think about what it would have been like 100 years ago with a lot of these standardbred or thoroughbred horses going basically town to town and county to county, hitting up these county fairs and basically taking on the local horses. And so that aspect of it, the David and Goliath element to it, just really nice to reflect on that. And no, and it's a Disney movie that I think has that kind of charm to it. And certainly from a nostalgia perspective, even having not seen the movie before, that aspect of it really, really rung true. I found myself smiling on a few occasions, especially in that last sequence.
Now, I want to talk about Dan Patch in a minute and Crazy Good, but before we get there, I want to talk about some other movies, horse racing movies, and harness racing in the movies. And, you know, out of my aging memory, I remember Granny on the Hillbillies and racing, let's see, Lady Bell, a trotter, down at Hollywood Park in Los Angeles there. And she went to the track and discovered that Lady Bell was a trotter, and she tried to get her to gallop because, you know, that this trotting thing is not really racing. So anyway, Granny gets her into a gallop and passes all the horses and thinks she's won. Of course, she gets taken down and disqualified like beef and cheddar for galloping, and Uncle Jed isn't too happy about that. But
not running over cones, right?
No, just no, didn't run over the cones though. Good point. And I think you've seen this movie, Seabiscuit, about the great racehorse from the late 30s, written by a book by Laura Hildebrand, which we read in our book club a few years back. A wonderful film, and really, I guess, the last big-time Hollywood film. I believe Jeff Bridges may have won Best Actor, and the film may have been nominated for an Oscar for Best Film. That was a tremendous a tremendous story. But but we don't see as much of that as we did in many years ago. Although I think the last thing I saw was a movie, I think 2008, called Shannon's Rainbow, which was filmed at the Meadows, and all the race calls are by none other than Roger Houston, who opens up this podcast every time. And there's a few other things there, but I think what I'd like to see now is I'd like to see a Dan Patch movie. How about you?
Well, I mean, crazy good for those listening who have not read that book. It's certainly worth a read. And Bern, you and I read it a number of years ago. But this was a horse that really, from a breeding perspective, didn't look like he should have been much of anything. But at one point was earning over $1 million a year, kind of on the circuit, hitting all the county fairs and larger tracks. I mean, not unlike the last scene in Justin Morgan Had a Horse. That would have been Dan Patch with an entourage going county to county and town to town and taking on whoever was there. This horse at one point, you know, was racing in front of 90,000 fans, earning $1 million a year, and really was the winningest athlete in North America until a certain baseball player named Babe Ruth came along
for sure
a couple decades later. So like that's a story that, like, even as we were reading that, I remember this from 2 years back, and like, I can't believe this is not a more well-known story. This horse had everything named after him, from brands of cigarettes to brands of washing machines.
Washing machines, yes.
That was some very, very strange kid strollers and wagons and washing machines. I don't know what the connection there is to a racehorse.
Oh, yeah. No, as you said, he was making $1 million, and that wasn't on the track. A lot of that was endorsements. The famous Mr.
Yeah.
Savage owned him, and he had a covered...
Yeah, the owner was crazy.
Yeah. And he had a covered track with a roof track in Minnesota where he would train during the winters. And he took a mile of 155, set the record, 155 in 1906. Adam, we've owned horses in the last 6 years, 5 years, that couldn't pace 155. And I remember interviewing John Campbell and asking who's on the podcast two episodes ago, the great driver of this sport. And he said, what would you like to do? He said, if I could sit behind one horse, I would love to sit behind Dan Patch in 1906. What was it like to drive that horse at 155 over 115 years ago?
Yeah, with the gear that they would have had available then. So certainly, of all the horse racing movies that have not been made, and I shouldn't say that have not been made, because there was apparently a movie made in the 50s, but it wasn't very good. I've never even seen it.
Yeah, I've got it. It was kind of like a Hollywood sort of love story, and the horse was on the side. Yeah, forgettable. Yeah. But again, it was a major film in 1947, if I think.
Yeah, that's one that would be really, really well suited for a remake, I would think. So listen, Bern, maybe we can do some more movie reviews of horses in the race, or horses in the movies, I should say, or racehorses in the movies. But that's something I think for another episode for sure. But listen, always great to catch up. And I think, if you've been listening with us the last few episodes, you know that we are absolutely delighted that Harness Racing is back. Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter. You can email us at hookedonharness@gmail.com. And if you've been listening, please don't forget to like and subscribe. It really does help others to find the show. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.